This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3764 for Thursday, the 5th of January, 2023. Today's show is entitled, My Text-Focused Journey into Tech. It is the first show by new host Ennis Tello and is about 19 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, my journey into technology covering some of the prose writing technology I've used along the way.
Hi, this is Ennis Tello. You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. We're very short of episodes at the moment. So if you've ever wanted to record a podcast, grab a microphone, go and record something that you think people might be interested in, and get yourself out there. Become a broadcasting star, my son. It's traditional on HPR to have your first episode or your first recording to describe your journey into technology, or at least that's what I've heard a few times over the last year or three that I've been listening to HPR. So I thought I'd do the same. By trade, I'm a writer, as in text or prose. And what became apparent while I was scribbling some notes for this episode was that my journey arc, if you like, through technology was pretty much step by step in with my use of technology as a writer. So I thought I'd discuss the two together and maybe share some of the writing tools and tips that I've picked up along the way. Might be useful and interesting for anyone who writes any type of prose. Might be documentation, might be blog posts. There are a few things I've picked up along the way, and there's a few techniques as well, which hopefully you guys might find interesting. So to start at the beginning, I first got into computing back in 1981. I won't say how old I was. There was a computer kicking around our house at home called the ZX81, made by a company called Sinclair, coming out of Cambridge, here in the UK. So I learnt programming BASIC on that, and also Z80 assembly, I guess. The ZX81 came with 1K of RAM, which obviously is very limiting. So we bought the £49 worth of 16K RAM pack, which sort of plugged into a proprietary port in the back of the ZX81. And you had to type on a membrane keyboard, which there was a particular technique to it, and it involved kind of wiping your fingers across each key. All very physical, and of course that had the effect as well of wobbling the computer slightly, which meant that the RAM pack wobbled slightly, which meant it crashed all the time. The RAM pack, as well as providing 16K, also provided some seismic instrumentation, and if someone dropped a pin in the next room from where you were trying to write your code byte by byte, and the whole computer would crash because the connection between the RAM pack and the computer would break momentarily, and then you get this kind of grey fuzzy screen on your television in front of you, which meant the computer had balked itself. So after that, having learnt to do a bit of programming, we progressed in our household anyway to the RISC computers from Acorn, another Cambridge-based computer company. RISC, of course, now being really quite popular, and you can track, obviously, ARM computing right back to Cambridge in the 80s. The computers we used were the BBC Micro A and B and the Acorn Electron. These are computers, I think, that never really got far from the UK. So I guess it was about the same kind of time as the TSR-80 was big in the US, and early Apple machines as well were coming out. The Apple II, I think, was floating around that time. So we're talking about that sort of era of technology. They're running on, was it 6502 processors, I think they were called. So again, I programmed on those in BASIC and also some assembly as well. And then I guess when I went away to college, I discovered very early 386s and 486s running DOS, DOS 3.1, and the first word processor I ever used was WordPerfect, which I think was version 6, had this fantastic white on blue display of text, which I still use to this day, actually, or at least that colour scheme. And it was great because what it would do as a word processor, it would show you literally how it was putting together your page. So rather like HTML tags or XML tags, if you wanted to select italics, you could see, if you turned on this mode, you could see the computer insert the italics tag and then you type whatever text it was you wanted in italics. And then when you turned off italics mode, it would insert another tag. So you could see literally exactly what the computer was going to do to your text, and it would show you spaces, it would show you new lines, it would show you underlines, and so on and so forth, using these tags. So you could predict incredibly accurately what your page was going to look like. And this I found to be absolutely fantastic. When I eventually got my first computer, which was a Macintosh LC475, I think there was also a Performer version and a Quadra version of the 475, depending on which market you're in. I used WordPerfect on that Mac until it was eventually stopped. It stopped being developed, and I was unfortunately pushed onto having to use Word by Microsoft for Mac. And it was there really that I discovered, or using Word for Mac, it was there that I discovered this distraction thing. And what I mean by that was that I would try and write something, and if my line of thought wandered off course, or I got distracted, I call it writer's block. It's probably blowing it up a bit, really. I don't think it was ever that grandiose, but let's say, you know, I lost my way a bit. Well, then I found that I could adjust the margins, or change font, or find a setting that would indent the first line of every paragraph and do things like remove orphans and all these things that a graphical user interface in a word processor will do for you. Anyway, after a while of, you know, using Comic Sans and then switching back to Times or Arial or Gill Sans or whatever font I found most attractive that day, I realized actually I was spending a lot more time playing with the layout than I was actually writing. And obviously this is something that a word processor offers you all the time, and it's a real distraction. And so it was from there really that I started to get into distraction-free word processing, or distraction-free text environments. And these are fantastic. The one I used on the Mac, which is still going to this day, is called Write Room, which you can customize to a massive degree. So you can have kind of funky, luminous green text on a black background with a block cursor that blinks to kind of make you, you know, look like something out of an 80s or 90s hacker movie. It offers you this thing called typewriter mode, which only shows you three or four lines of what you're writing and blurs the rest out. So there's no even glancing back into your previous text. It really does keep you focused. When I switched to Linux in the, I would say, the early noughties, perhaps not full time, perhaps not as a daily driver, but I certainly began to use Linux. About that time, I was using Crunchbang Linux on a Samsung 10-inch netbook. I discovered various text editors in the Linux world, some of which I use to this day. The one I'm using at the moment in Linux is called FocusWriter, which is great. It's rather like Write Room, and obviously there are dozens of these, so I'm just mentioning a couple. And again, you can configure it. You can put a black screen or any color. You can put an image around your text. You can blur text you're not concentrating on out. Just show a few lines, the blinking cursor, white on black on white, whatever you fancy, really. The idea being that you can, if you want, even, you know, turn off things like spell correction as you go along, normally as you're typing away. In most text editors, or prose text editors, you can see words you've misspelt with an underlining or a red wobbly line under a word you've misspelt, Well, with a distraction-free text editor, I would say turn that off. Because if you're typing a long sentence, it's really tempting to go back and correct your spelling as you go along. And that way you lose your thread and it slows you down. It's, for me at least, it's so much better just to splurge the text out and then go back and do all the fun stuff like formatting and spell correction and grammar correction and things like that. It is something that drives me crazy, actually, the whole system and the way that computers have now centralized communication as well as work into one place, into one desktop environment often. For instance, the latest iterations of the Mac OS, turning off notifications is really quite difficult. It's a bit like Android. You have to go through each application and turn off notifications one by one, or make sure that the do not disturb mode lasts all day and all night. Personally, that doesn't work for me at all. In fact, if I've got a serious job of work on, I'll turn off all notifications on my phone, on the computer. I'll even go and put my phone or tablet in the room next door. So if it pings or burrs or whirs or rings, I'll just ignore it while I'm concentrating on what I'm doing. And this works for me very well. And I suppose it's analogous to using distraction-free text editors. It just keeps me concentrated on exactly what I'm doing. When I go into the office in which I work a few days a week, it always amazes me that the people younger than me in the office are sometimes on their phones, they're writing or surfing or doing their work, and at the same time they're switching application and just typing in a WhatsApp message into a web page, or they're picking up their phone and just sending off a quick text or posting on Instagram, that kind of thing. And that really doesn't work for me. I find that if my train of thought shifts for just a few seconds, it can take me 10, 20, 30 seconds to kind of get back on track. And I'm not saying that people who switch from communicating on various platforms to their work, I'm not saying they do a better or worse job than me. Particularly, all I know is that it doesn't work for me, and I wonder how they can, because I know that I can't work like that. And this kind of brings me back now to technology and the way that I use it. I tried Vim or VI first and then moved on to Vim, both in graphic and keyboard shortcut modes. I didn't get on with Vim too well, mostly because I'd be typing and, you know, would miss out the first four or five letters of each word, or at least when I first started typing, because I wouldn't be in insert mode, I'd be in some command mode. And I found that I never really got into the habit of being able to switch modes, particularly in Vim. Having said that, what I do like about Vim is that it can all be keyboard controlled. And this is a big thing for me. Back in the early days of my career, I was working as a help desk technician. And obviously I was on a computer all day, helping people out on the phone and going around the college that I happened to work in, helping people with their computers. And I found that I got really bad RSI, repetitive strain injury, in my right hand. And this was actually in those days from using the Puck mouse that came with the iMacs that we used at that time. And I used to get these terrible shooting pains up my right wrist and right at my right arm. And so to this day, if I am forced to use a mouse, I have to keep changing the mouse that I use. So I'll go from an upright mouse to a standard 2 or 3 button mouse, and then move to a trackball, and then move to a thumbball trackpad or a Wacom tablet, and then back to a mouse, and keep changing so that my hand isn't in the same position to control the computer the whole time. And this has led to me wanting to control the applications that I use almost entirely, or at least as much as I can, using keyboard shortcuts. And this is why I first got into using Vim. Obviously, if you use Vim a lot, you hear about other similar packages. And of course, the elephant in the room there is Emacs. And it was from my use of Emacs, really, that I discovered that I had, in fact, come home, or at least regressed 40 years. I'm now using Emacs for as much as I possibly can. I'm finding it a brilliant environment in which to work. I'm experimenting at the moment with EXWM, which is using Emacs as your Windows manager. It controls the X Windows system. And you can obviously send email, read your email, browse the web in various forms to various varying degrees of complexity, all using the same keyboard shortcuts and key bindings right across every application. And this, for me, is absolutely fantastic. I very rarely have to move my right hand over to the mouse, if ever. I find that if I am using a Linux machine, which are now my daily drivers, I always have i3 Windows Manager on those, and I find myself switching between maybe Nano, Emacs, Focuswriter, and then if I do have to use a traditional word processor, which I do in my line of work, mostly actually to track changes when the copy that I've written goes to clients and back, I use WPS Office. WPS Office is closed source. It's a proprietary package. There is a community version. It's out of China from a company called Kingsoft. And the reason why I use it over, for instance, LibreOffice or any of the alternatives, AbbeyWord, for instance, Caligra, I've also used and enjoyed. But the reason why I use WPS Office on Linux is because it can be skinned or given the user interface of what looks like a 1990s version of Word for Mac. So even though it was Word for Mac back in the 90s that pushed me onto this road of distraction-free text editing, if I'm having to use a graphical user interface word processor, it'll be WPS Office that I use. Tools as well that I use. Hunspell, I find great. That's shipped usually with Focuswriter, and you can switch between many, many languages if English isn't your first language. And then there are, of course, variations on English. So you can switch between US English, UK English, Australian English, with their particular variations. If I'm using Emacs, I use iSpell or aSpell. Again, switching between dictionaries is quick and easy. I haven't really got to grips with grammar checking in Emacs. I know there's an API onto Grammarly.com. My employer pays for Grammarly, so it is a service I use. It's not particularly useful, but it does pick up things that you think you might correct if you had the time to proofread your own stuff more accurately. For instance, you can start a sentence with a plural subject and then use a singular form of the noun. And you might not notice you've done that, but something like Grammarly will pick it up. A lot of Grammarly's suggestions you can ignore, but it is quite useful on occasion if you haven't got somebody else, another human, to do your proofreading or sub-editing for you. And I've yet to plumb in a decent grammar editor into Emacs, something I'll be looking at fairly soon, I think. Now, whether that's the Grammarly API that I end up using, I don't know. I'd be very interested to hear how, if there are any other writers out there, whether they're using a grammar editor at all, which one they're using, and any Emacs users out there, how they're integrating grammar editing into their Emacs workflows. I'll be putting links to all the applications that I've mentioned today in the show notes. There's a great article I found on using Vim as a word processor. It's really handy. I'll also put links to WriteRoom, iSpell or aSpell and Hunspell in the notes. So that's about all from me, I think. Thanks ever so much, everyone, for listening into this. Hope you found it useful. As I said at the beginning, if you want to record a podcast of your own, please do feel free to find a microphone, make a recording, submit it, and get yourself out there. So this is Enestello, signing off on Hacker Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.